This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. The Sabres announced they have signed forward Johan Larson to a one-year contract for $1.55 million. Larson recently completed his seventh NHL season with 14 points in 73 games. Larson has recorded 79 points in 331 career NHL games. Center Ryan Dzingel and the Hurricanes have agreed to a two-year contract that will pay him $3.25 million this season, $3.5 million next season. Dzingel had career highs in goals, assists, and points in 78 games last season with Ottawa and Columbus. The number two pick in the 2019 NHL draft, forward Kaapo Kakko, agreed to terms on an entry-level contract with the Rangers. Kakko had 38 points in 45 games in the Finnish top professional league last season. His 22 goals were the most by a player 18 years or younger in that league's history. It was also reported Chargers running back Melvin Gordon preparing to hold out for a new contract, and if he does not receive one, he will demand a trade from the Chargers and will not report to training camp. Gordon would be subject to fines of up to $40,000 for each day missed at camp if he does not report. Chargers vets will report to training camp on July 24th, or scheduled to anyway. Novak Djokovic will get the chance to defend his Wimbledon title in Sunday's final after he beat number 23 seed Roberto Bautista Agut in four sets earlier today. Djokovic is in his sixth final at the All England Club. He will look to add to his previous four Wimbledon wins. It would also be his 16th major title. He's going to play either Roger Federer or Rafa Nadal. They're in the fourth set right now of their semifinal match. And that is your update from One Bills Live here at One Bills Drive. And we've been talking all day about Josh Allen's traits and the one you think will best serve him and the team for success in 2019. And we had a host of different answers so far. And the thing that I like is that some of you today have brought things that would go into that other category in our Twitter poll. But what has been carrying the day more than anything else has been his athleticism and his playmaking, and I get that. But I'm glad to see that more than a third of the respondents have marked down competitive spirit. Not because I marked it down, but because I think his competitive spirit allows his athleticism and playmaking ability to be maximized. And for me, you know, if that is the catalyst for the athleticism and the playmaking to be on display, then I think that should be respected as maybe his most valuable trait. And I think leadership is an underrated trait of his. And, you know, granted, fans haven't really seen that, and sometimes it's difficult to recognize that in a player. You see their ability, physical ability, certainly more often than leadership traits and things of that nature. And that's more taking place behind the scenes and, you know, in preparation for a game every week. But I do think that's something that Josh has in spades as well. And I think will serve this team well also, because the quarterbacks that have come through here, while some have been good at leadership, they've been lacking in one of these other areas. Or if they've been good in one of those other areas, maybe they weren't the best leader that could bring the whole locker room together, maybe just the side of the ball. Josh is capable of bringing the whole locker room together. Now, we've heard some calls today about Josh's intelligence, the strides that he made. Some people referenced the Chris Sims interview with Josh Allen on NBC Sports, and when he was here taping that interview, he took the time to stop in here on One Bills Live with Murph and Steve. So I want to play you a portion of that interview where Chris Sims kind of describes what he feels some of the best traits of Josh's game and personality set are. So let's take a listen in here to Chris Sims as he was with Murph and Steve when he was out here conducting the interview with Josh Allen for NBC Sports.
Hey, we've got a special guest in studio right with us right now. He's in town doing his own work for Chris Sims Unbuttoned, the podcast. He is an NBC Sports NFL analyst, co-host of PFT Live on NBC Sports Network, played quarterback in the league for 8 years. Happy to have Chris Sims with us. Chris, thanks for coming by.
No, thanks for having me. No, it's been great. I mean, this whole experience has been really cool. I haven't, oddly enough, I've never been to this stadium. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow. Really?
My years of playing.
8 years in the league?
I know. 8 years in the league. For whatever reason, when we were about to come up here to Buffalo, I changed the team, and then I never got the chance to do it. So my first time here at the facility.
Took drastic steps to make sure you didn't play in Buffalo.
You're right. Yeah. But the facility's special. It was really cool to be around, and I love being around Josh Allen.
Did they give you the nickel tour of the new place?
Saw it all. Got to sit in the massage the chairs with Josh Allen doing an interview. That was hilarious because it beat me up a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, this is a great facility. Yeah.
Tell me about what you're working on with Josh for Chris Sims Unbuttoned, the podcast.
Yeah, I do a podcast, been doing it for a number of years now. And, you know, hey, it's a little bit more maybe for the nuanced listener, the listener who wants to get into the weeds about football. And with Josh, I've been a huge fan of his from when he came out in college. I'm pretty sure I came out on the show at some point during the draft when he came out. I thought he was the best quarterback coming out in the draft, in the 2018 draft. So I was a fan of his, and I like to give a little attention to guys who I don't think are getting the attention they deserve. You know, Josh Allen to me, and again, I don't know, I know I don't have every answer in the world, but I see a lot of special things about his game. I mean, we're talking about an arm that's in the same class as Patrick Mahomes. You know, three games of almost rushing for 100 yards. I feel like if any other quarterback in football did that this year, every highlight show would have led with that talk. But because it's Josh Allen in Buffalo, it just wasn't sexy enough. So I kind of pride myself on maybe giving those type of guys a little more credit than the national media.
You know, we've noticed, and I think you'll agree with me on this, because of last year's draft and those quarterbacks in the first round, and everybody had a favorite. All right, I get that.
Sure.
And those who did not have Josh as their favorite kind of overlooked what he did last year.
They can't let it go.
They can't let it go.
Right.
And how good we always say he almost got better week to week last year.
Yeah.
Got better every week.
Exactly right. I mean, towards the end of the year, I mean, Josh Allen was one of the can't-miss watches in all of football with the running and some of the big-time throws. I know it's not all polished and perfect, but you're exactly right. And, you know, me, and I know Steve's probably the same way. As an evaluator and I watch players, if I'm wrong, admit you're wrong at some point, but you're right. There was this faction of people who were not on his bandwagon coming out of the draft, and they refused to really give him any credit last year when things went well, and that bothers me. I don't like that, and I try to kind of correct those stupid narratives sometimes.
Good. Well, there's so many platforms for people to get their voice out there,
right.
And they, you know, and it does take on a little bit of a life of its own, but I think you're right. It does take a superhuman effort by a player like Jared Goff. He has to have a kind of a second season like Jared Goff did, and then maybe
someone will jump on.
And even Jared Goff, people will blame Jeff Fisher.
Right.
Or
other
things.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
How do you think, I mean, what kind of year would you think would do that for a guy like Jeff? Would it have to be a team effort, or could it be an individual statistic effort?
I think it could be a little bit of a combination of both. I mean, I think if anybody starts to see the growth a little bit on maybe some of the accuracy and things like that we all agree that Josh could probably fix up a little bit and starts to put numbers out there that pop to people, I think people will start to take more notice. But, you know, ultimately it will be judged, I think, on the team and how competitive they are. And, hey, you know, you guys have had me on before. I'm a big fan of what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are doing here in Buffalo. I mean, I think the conversation for winning the offseason as far as the draft and free agency. But yeah, I look at it that way, to where I think the team's got to be relevant maybe in December. This is the one thing I tell people all the time too, with as far as Josh Allen's concerned last year in the draft. I just don't think the public realizes how high up the board Josh Allen was on everybody's draft board. You know, from my understanding, and I've said these things publicly, you know, Cleveland, if it wasn't Baker Mayfield, they were taking Josh Allen. Of course, everything I've heard here in Buffalo, Josh Allen was the number one quarterback on the board. Arizona Cardinals, Josh Allen was the number one quarterback on the board, was told that. The New York Giants, if they didn't take Saquon Barkley, was going to be Josh Allen. So I always kind of throw that out there to kind of, you know, stop the fire or the crap sometimes.
Yeah. On the topic of Josh and the accuracy, the Bill, and it's evident, obviously, but the Bills, Bean and McDermott will tell you that more than the accuracy, they're most concerned about his decision making. That's what they want to work on this year. As a former quarterback, do you see that with him? Like, he can make better decisions?
I do. Yeah. It doesn't always have to be like the home run.
Right.
I think that would be the thing. You know,
he does it all the time.
Yeah, right. He's because he's so gifted that way. It's kind of the gift and the curse when you can throw a a ball 50 yards on a line and not really step into it, you go, oh, I can fit it in there.
Yeah.
And he's got to learn to kind of have a better gauge of when to take those chances, when to be aggressive. There's nothing wrong with the 5-yard completion sometimes and letting the guy run after the catch. But he's learning on the fly. He didn't have those type of guys that could help him at Wyoming. You get to the NFL, you forget, oh gosh, I throw the ball to LeSean McCoy and he's got 10 yards of space. That could become a 40-yard gain in a hurry. So, yeah, those are little things I look at that he could certainly brush up. And I would expect him to, one under the tutelage of Brian Daboll, who I think a lot of. And, hey, you guys know, they got some receivers here this year, some other guys that can do some different things, and Beasley and Brown, who can do some of that New England jerk route, option routes that you see Tom Brady be so successful with.
Yeah. So that's Chris Sims, who was previously on with Murph and Steve right after he did that interview that a lot of Bills fans got a lot from in terms of a peek inside Josh's brain, because Chris Sims was picking Josh Allen's brain to see how he diagnosed defenses, how he went through his process pre-snap. And I think it really provided some exposure to the football IQ of Josh and how advanced he is despite being young in football and, you know, not going to all the same Elite 11 camps that the likes of Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold went to, when they were in grade school. So certainly some encouraging comments from Chris Sims that we wanted to kind of remind everybody about. I do want to get back to the tweet sheet here to finish this out in terms of the things that people feel are Josh Allen's best trait that will help breed success for the team in the fall and for him for that matter. So a tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems. And this one from Ken, he says, competitiveness. You can't coach that. And he's right. Players that excel usually have that fire just naturally burning within. And that's something you cannot really grow. You either are super competitive or you are not. It seems to be an inherent trait, and yes, Josh unquestionably has that. From Vince, how can you pick just one trait? It's a combination of all of them. He's an athletic playmaker with a feverish competitive spirit, and those traits gravitate the team in his direction, meaning that leadership is a direct byproduct of his DNA. So Vince thinks it's all of them, and yeah, I mean, they all contribute to the total package. Is one more valuable than the other? Vince obviously does not think so, but it looks like one certainly leads to another in the eyes of Vince, and I don't disagree with that. I think that's certainly plausible. Last one here from Buffalo Bills fan to you. The answer is the whole package. How about a transition there? That was good. What a segue. The answer is the whole package and Josh's enthusiasm for his team and how he reps Buffalo. Great kid, and it is so much fun to watch him compete. You just never know what's going to happen, but you know it's going to be lots of fun. Great season ahead. Can't wait. And I think that is the buzz that is the 2019 season, or that will be the 2019 season, because the buzz about where Josh's game can go is palpable here in Western New York, and I'm sure in other places where there are strong Bills transplant contingents, because I think everybody feels that if the other parts come together, and those are ifs, offensive line, receiving core, tight end, if those other parts do come together, that Josh will unquestionably be able to take a sizable step forward in his development. Now, I wanted to get to a couple of other NFL news and notes here. I talked about Sean Payton. Obviously, we know his team, the Saints team, is the one that caused the knee-jerk reaction to suddenly review pass interference calls. So, you know, in light of what happened in the NFC title game. And he was asked in a recent interview about how he thinks it's going to go. Because there's this line of thinking that coaches will hold on to their challenges more, knowing that the most important reviews in the last two minutes, or will use their challenges more, knowing in the last 2 minutes that it's a booth review for things like pass interference. And Sean Payton is not so sure. He says, let's start with the very first premise for the fans. It's still just like all the other challenges that we have in place. Remember, we only have two to start with, so I don't think you're going to see more challenge flags. Probably you're going to see a little bit more judicious use of them, knowing that you want to have at least one left. And if you feel like there's something you see clearly and it's outside of 2 minutes, as a coach, you can still challenge it. And of course, inside 2 minutes, it goes upstairs to replay. And we're all in this day and age with our technology and with the fans getting a chance to see real time, we're wanting those calls, especially in games like that, to be officiated correctly. I don't debate that you want to get it right, but I have a problem with this knee-jerk reaction by the league to address pass interference only because it's such a subjective call to begin with that I just don't think there's a way to fix it in all cases. There may be some obvious ones, and I guess that's enough to convince them to take this step, but I fear that it's going to do more harm than good in terms of slowing the game down, making it more anticlimactic than it already is with a lot of reviews. So I'm not a huge fan of that. Now, yesterday's show, I'm on with Steve, and we were talking a bit about the 18-game regular season, which more and more seems to be something that will be on the agenda for the owners when they sit down for CBA talks with the NFLPA for the new collective bargaining agreement. And already there are reports out there. And Steve, as a matter of practice, with an 18-game schedule, said you do that and you reduce wear and tear on your players by only allowing players to participate in a maximum of 16 games, meaning no one player on your roster, if healthy, can play all 18 games. They're only allowed to play a maximum of 16. And that brings in a lot of careful decision-making when it comes to your star players, because you certainly may have a division game in week 17 or 18. And if you use your feature running back in the first 16 and he doesn't get hurt all year, you're out of luck the last 2 weeks. So now there was a report just last hour. Owners have proposed 18 games with a 16-game limit for each player. It's the Tasker plan. I think Steve's dream could be coming true. So the report was in the Wall Street Journal and says that part of the NFL's push for 18 regular season games, they've advanced the possibility with a per-player limit of 16 games per year. So I think even though players will only be playing a maximum of 16 games, again, the league will point, well, we're keeping the safety practices and advancements intact because no one player is playing more than 16 games. They are going to probably have to expand rosters. I have to admit, I have to believe that if the NFLPA is going to go along with this, and presumably with an 18-game regular season, they'll reduce the preseason to just 2 games, I have to believe that the NFLPA will say, we're on board with that, but you better expand the roster to 60 players. I don't know. Injuries pile up, and as even the players are known to say, football is a 100% injury sport. There is a 100% rate of injury every week. Not with every player, obviously, but with every roster, someone is banged up. And I think if you're going to go to 18 games and players on your 53-man roster can only play a maximum of 16, you have a few of the wrong injuries the last 2 weeks of the season, and you've used up 5 other guys who are healthy and can't play either, you're going to be short, and you're going to be going to a game with 42 players instead of 47 or 46. So they're going to have to navigate this very carefully, and the NFL ownership is going to have to tread very lightly. And I think the olive branch to the NFLPA might be, we'll expand the roster a certain amount in order to ensure that you have enough players to dress, even though there is this 16-game player limit in the proposal, at least as it reportedly exists. Tony Dungy apparently was one of the first people to discuss this as an option. And, you know, they're calling it the 18-16 approach. And I mentioned this to Steve yesterday. I think where the problem comes in is at the quarterback position. The quarterbacks, they're the key to your offense. And now for the for two of your games, you're going to have to play a backup, which is, you know, a contingency plan at best. I mean, let's be honest. So I don't know how you navigate that. Maybe you make an exception for that position and they can play more games. Of course, then the record books are going to be skewed from 14 games to 16 games to 18 games. But we'll have to see how that all shakes out. Goodell was not shy in denying in a recent interview that the league is pushing for this. He kind of just basically stated recently that they're looking for ways to address the regular season schedule. He said, quote, "We always talk about how do we restructure our season? Is it the right structure with 16 regular season and 4 preseason games? Should we look at expanding the playoffs? Those are discussions we're having with the NFLPA. I think steps we've made to make our game safer and better have worked tremendously well in collaboration with our players, but also in changing rules and equipment. We had a 30% reduction in concussions last year, and I think we can use that same model to reduce injuries, both upper and lower body injuries. So I think the way we've modified in the last CBA was to really work to a way to train our players differently and modify our game in such a way as to address those issues. Now, what does that all mean? I think to me that means, yes, they're going to be pushing for an 18-game regular season, reduce the preseason by 2 games, and then if this 16-player player game limit rule comes into play, it may prove to be more palatable to the NFLPA, not only because it's not more wear and tear on players, thereby shortening their careers, it's giving more potential NFL players jobs because I think they're going to have to expand the roster so there are enough players available. I mean, if you're around an NFL team like media members are, and you're watching guys in practice in week 15, 16, 17, they're hanging. I mean, their bodies are killing them. Now, if you go to 18 games, you're just going to need more people. The roster is going to have to be larger. To what extent, I don't know, and I'm sure they'll have analytics to ascertain what percent the roster has to increase, whether it's 2%, 3%, 5%, I don't know. But I don't think you can get by with a 53-man roster. Maybe the ownership will hedge there and say, well, you can have a 15-player practice squad, and you can have 5 protected players on that practice squad. But they make practice squad money because you know that the NFL ownership is going to want to keep the revenue streams going and keep that down. So there are a whole bunch of different ways that this can turn, but it looks like the 18-game regular season is going to be a major point of emphasis for the NFL ownership as they head to CBA negotiations in the not-too-distant future, if not right now. We got to take a break here. We're at the bottom of the hour, but we've got true-false coming up on the other side of that break. And if anybody wants to chime in with one last call, I'll try to work you in here on the back half of the hour as we head quickly towards 3 o'clock. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown with you as we steamroll towards the 3 o'clock hour. And on the back half of the show here, clearly, and we'll get to NFL true false in just a second, but we do want to take a call because we got Bill in Lockport hanging on who wants to chime in here. And Bill, welcome to the program. What do you got for us here? Bill, are you there?
This is Bernie.
Oh, Bernie, okay. Well, they told me your name was Bill. My apologies, Bernie. What do you got for us?
That's all right. Say. Great show. You're almost home with a solo.
Yeah, right?
Doing well.
Thanks for helping me out.
I wanted to let you know, perhaps you already heard of an event coming up to Rochester the day before Bill's open training camp. is a world long drive tour stop. They call it the Rock City Rumble, and the current world number one long driver is a guy by the name of Ryan Steenberg, and he's an Ithaca College former quarterback and linebacker, and also a master of fine arts in medical illustrating from RIT. And the show's going to be from the 20th to the 24th.
Okay.
The day before the Bills open up at Pennington.
All right. Well, you got a free plug in there, Bernie. So congrats to you. I'd like to see Josh Allen in that, because he can hit the ball. But something tells me that Sean McDermott probably wouldn't be too thrilled with Josh rearing back and trying to hit the tar out of a golf ball the day before training camp starts and tweak his back. So thanks for all the calls today, people that chimed in. It was a really big help with me flying solo here with Steve with a terribly upset stomach. He had the sick sweats today, man. It was rough. He came in and we turned him right around and sent him back home. So hopefully he's doing better. And he can rest up over the weekend and be back on Monday. But I do want to get to, at this point in time, the aforementioned NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. And I'm obviously doing this just me. So we've got a few here. The first one on the docket, Hugh Jackson will get another head coaching job in the NFL. There was a report on NFL.com that Hugh Jackson wants another shot as a head coach. All I'm going to say is four words. No way in hell is this guy going to be an NFL head coach again. He was in Cleveland, and granted, it was a big undertaking, but he not only clashed with the number one draft choice in Baker Mayfield, he clashed with his coaching staff, as they had clearly different philosophies, different opinions, and a different approach to how to run a football team. And if you can't recognize that there are egos that you cannot work with collaboratively, well, that's on you because you hired your staff. I think Hugh Jackson can be a decent coordinator in this league, but he is not head coaching material at that level. So I'm going with false on this one, and God help the NFL team that even gives him a shot to be an NFL head coach again. I just don't think he's head coaching material at the NFL level. Maybe in college he could be a successful head coach. But not at the NFL. I just don't see that happening. This one, I don't know what to make of this. The Giants have a, quote, really good problem at quarterback. I don't know if this is tongue-in-cheek, but basically the word out of the Giants camp that made headlines was right at the close of minicamp. Head coach Pat Shurmur was basically asked, you know, where Daniel Jones is in his progress. Does he have a chance at the starting job? And Shurmur did not answer it directly and kind of left it open-ended, which, you know, and he even said, you can speculate what you want. And so the New York media is like, okay, we're going to do it. So they're of the belief that Daniel Jones can compete from day one, which Coach Shurmur essentially said, compete for the starting job. Now, they also quoted Golden Tate in the article and said, and Tate said, well, you know, it's great that Daniel's coming along, but Eli can still sling it. I like what I'm seeing from him in the spring camps. So I'm not writing off Eli yet. So there seems to be a divergence of opinion there. And then either way, there's this claim in the NFL.com story that, well, you know, Eli still has it, but if he goes south in a hurry, they can turn to Daniel Jones and everything will be fine. I'm going with no. I'm going false on this. It is not a really good problem to have a quarterback, because what you are is in limbo, ultimately. You're constantly second-guessing yourself, if not publicly, certainly in your head, and who you go with if it doesn't work will have you second-guessed by the media and the fan base. You just want to have a guy. You don't want a veteran guy that you're wondering if he still has it, or a rookie wondering, can he play effectively for us right away? That's not a good problem to have. That's a terrible problem. It kind of falls into the bucket of, if you don't have a starter, or if you have two starters, you don't have one, because nobody's good enough to definitively take the job and run with it. So it is not a good problem at quarterback for the Giants, and that is probably why they're not going to have a very good season either in terms of wins and losses. Okay, for the second time in the show, we're going to be mentioning Robbie Gould. Robbie Gould will become the first kicker to headline the list of training camp holdouts. As we mentioned earlier in the show when we were talking about the franchise tag deadline on Monday, actually it's the long-term contract signing ability. So franchise tagged players have up until Monday to sign a long-term contract. Otherwise, they have to play under the tag for that for the 2019 season. And Robbie Gould is one of the three unsigned franchise tagged players. He's the 49ers kicker. And, I mean, he's the second most accurate kicker in NFL history. So he certainly has the reputation. You know, if you're going to have a kicker hold out, it might as well be the second most accurate kicker in NFL history to be a holdout. And this all stems from being away from his family, who he left behind in Chicago while he kind of bounced around between two teams the last couple of years. You know, San Francisco and the Giants. And they, looking at this story, he basically told ESPN's Adam Schefter the week before the draft that the earliest he will show up is 49ers week one, September 8th, if he shows up at all. This is a quote from Gould. "The bottom line is, I'm unsure if I want to play there anymore. At this point, I have to do what's best for me and my family back home." So he looks like he's willing to walk away from 4.97 on a franchise tag as a kicker. And it's clear to him that his priorities, he's got family ahead of money, and he's probably made enough money to be comfortable for a couple of lifetimes, let alone one. So I am going to say true. I think Robbie Gould will hold out. And who would have expected to see a kicker hold out for training camp? I don't think I would have ever anticipated that, not in my wildest dreams. Now, guys, I know we wanted to add a fourth one here. Do we have the fourth one? Yes or no? Okay, so fourth one here, and it deals with the 49ers as well. Tight end George Kittle is the new Gronk. 49ers tight end George Kittle is the new Gronk. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously the quarterback in San Francisco, has played with both of these guys. He obviously played with Gronk in the time where he got some starts in New England in place of Tom Brady, and he didn't play with Kittle much of last year because he was out injured, but he has been around him. He has played with him. He has thrown to him, and he's of the opinion that Kittle is very much like Gronk as a blocker and a receiver, and he said the thing that has him most similar to Gronk is how much he enjoys the game. He always brings a great energy to practice. He's kind of a fun-loving guy. So I think from that standpoint, yeah, he probably is like Gronk. Is he going to produce like Gronk, though? I mean, we're talking about a generational talent at the position who was also a top five blocker at that position probably in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, everybody talks about the plays that Gronk made in the passing game, and I think Kittle can do that. Is he the blocker that Gronk is? I don't know. Maybe I'm splitting hairs there. So I know that Kittle had a gigantic season, even with Garoppolo out of the lineup last year. I'm going to say false only because I need to see more from Kittle, not just 1 year. And with Garoppolo, logic would say it could very well happen where he's just as productive, if not more so, because I think he did finish the league with the most receptions. I want to say Travis Kelce, Kansas City tight end, had it after his last game, but then San Francisco played a 4 o'clock game in week 17, and Kittle passed Kelce and leapfrogged him again at the end of the year. And I want to say he ended up with the most receptions this past season by a tight end. So I'm going to say false now because I need to see more from him, more than just a one-year giant season to say he's the new Gronk. We need a little bit more of a body of work. So that is NFL True False presented by Yanson Cheese. We will take a break and we will put a bald. You were a big help today with me flying solo and Steve out sick. Back to close up the show in a moment. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, the official home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. And on the show today, we had one Lorenzo Alexander, who appeared on the lowdown portion of the program. And in addition to talking about the upcoming joint practices with the Carolina Panthers and training out in Arizona with some teammates like Eddie Yarborough and Trent Murphy and Shaq Lawson, he also addressed our Twitter poll today, which was about Josh Allen's best trait, and he addressed Josh's emerging leadership.
I think you said it right there. Being designated the guy from jumpstart, not, you know, he's competing, but he knows he's the man. And so I think guys can naturally, instead of trying to say, well, I wonder who's going to be the starting quarterback. You know, is it going to be AJ? Is it going to be him? Is it going to be Nate? We know Josh is the guy. And
right.
He's earned that right based on what he does. So now guys know who the leader is on the offense, and he's really been able to grow into that role and really get all the reps, do the things like he's doing, flying guys out to wherever he is so he can work out in the offseason. All those little things that once you know you've been kind of, you know, handed the reins a little bit, that you can really dive in and really take over and really be the leader you are without feeling like you stepped on anybody's toes and claiming something that's not necessarily yours yet. You know what I mean? So it's been great to see him do that. He even started doing that last year.
So that was Lorenzo Alexander's take on Josh's emerging leadership. Certainly easier for him to step forward and into that role now as the entrenched starter at quarterback, when last year at this time he was in the midst of a three-man quarterback competition. So our final numbers on the Twitter poll today in terms of what Josh Allen's best trait is to help breed success for this team in 2019, athleticism and playmaking was the leader at the start. It's the leader in the clubhouse. But competitive spirit did make up some ground on it, only trailed by 10% here at the end of the day, and leadership in there at 18%. But I think that will be more readily apparent to fans now that he is the firmly entrenched starter for the Bills at quarterback. And other, we, you know, didn't have a huge representation, but there were some interesting answers there, including adaptability and some other things like coachability, which should not be overlooked either, knowing he's still got some stuff to learn. I thank all the callers who chimed in and helped contribute to the program. My thanks to the people on the other side of the glass: James Robel, Tom Hollander, Jeff Koltenak, J.J. Torito, Kevin Carges, Kelly Rudin, our executive producer, Jay Harris. Murph and Steve Tasker are back in the saddle next week, as long as Steve is not throwing up anymore. Thanks for watching One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Have a good weekend, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.